Before we get started with this week's episode, we'd like to remind you folks that the Air Raid podcast is available at many places, including iTunes, the Stitcher Radio app for your smart device, CairoRadio.com, and the all-new Adore Network at Adore.fm. Let's get started with the episode. Well, hello and welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Air Raid Podcast. This is episode 273, and what is now officially considered a long and drawn-out series. I am your host, Aaron Roden, and this, of course, is the show where we drop bombs of awesome straight into your ear holes. Yes, indeed, folks, we've got a great show planned for you this week, albeit late. One day late. Better than last week, where it was 2 days late, right? Yeah, that's okay. That's okay. It's a podcast. What are you going to do? What are you going to do about it? Nothing. I'm sorry. Here I am getting aggro on you guys, the listener, just for wanting this thing on a regular basis. I apologize. We have been steeped in getting ready for Halloween here at the Roden household, and it's been taking a lot out of me, man. Seriously. Putting up lights, stringing up... concocting and stringing up scary, spooky ghosts, hanging them in the tree, and then carving jack-o'-lanterns, which was a very gross endeavor, by the way. I don't know what it is, man, about sticking my hand in, like, something kind of, like, you know, slimy and cold and wet. I don't like it. I can do water. That's great. But as soon as you throw, like, stringy seeds in there and stuff like that, I can't do that. Some fibrous material, I can't do it, man. Squash grosses me out. The inside of squash just grosses me out. I can't hang. Can't hang at all. Plus, we got a, so dad, me, that being me, I was given, you know, the duty of doing the jack-o'-lanterns this year. And I was taking one for the team, for the Roden team. Because my girls refused to even help me with it. Tatum wouldn't even stick her hand in there. She was too afraid. I tried to even, like, put it manually, put her hand in there. Great, great parenting, by the way. She just could not do it, man. She almost got to the point of, like, screaming at me because she didn't want to stick her hand in there. And I totally feel her, man. Totally feel her because I didn't want to put my hand in there either. Plus, when I cut the top off of the second jack-o'-lantern, it was totally rotten on the inside, and that made it even worse. But, like, because I'm a man, I just did it. I gripped my teeth, and I just bared it. It's not how you're supposed to say that saying. That did not sound right at all, man, at all. But it was rotten on the inside, and I did it, man. I did it anyway. And now that one is probably going to be rotten before Halloween strikes this Saturday. Speaking of Saturday, Halloween night, man. Our guest today, David Terry of the band Aqueduct, is playing a show with Of Montreal on Halloween night at Neptune Theater here in Seattle. It's a Halloween costume party. Man, it's going to be a great show. Of Montreal, Diane Coffey, and Aqueduct. So if you're in the Seattle area or around it, come on out to the Neptune Theater. Get your tickets now. You can probably just type that into a Google search and find it there. Aqueduct also has an album that is out right now. Came out back in July. It's called Wild Nights. And it's fantastic, and I think you're really going to like it. We're going to feature some music from that album. Like I said, it's out now. You can get it by going to aqueductisgoodmusic.com and ordering yourself a copy. Okay, so go ahead and do that. Let's see. On the to-do list here, we've got a couple of emails. This one from Julia here in Seattle. Julia says, and this is it. She says, do not change the name of the podcast. I like Air Raid how it is and how I've been listening to it for the last 5 years. Oh, thank you, Julia. That's awesome, man. Thank you so much. And it's glad to hear that you've been listening and with us for that amount of time. That is amazing. May I apologize for the first 2 years of this show. There you go. I'm sorry, Julia. This one from Matt, who I believe we have heard from before as well. He lives in Kent, Washington, which is a, I don't know if you'd call that like a suburb of Seattle. No, it's not a suburb. It's its own city, man. Kent is its own city. Chill out, Roden. He also says the same thing. Do not change Air Raid's name. I love it. Okay. Well, done. Done. And also from Kevin Sir, a good friend of ours, and Camaro Kev, two Kevins, both Kevins, great minds think alike, said don't change the name of Air Raid. So we're not going to do it. We're not going to change it. It's going to stick. I thought I wanted to kind of grow things up and then heard from a lot of you guys. We got more emails than just those two and talked to some more people that were close to the show, some friends of the show, and they said, yeah, don't change it, man. And Air Raid's kind of got the story behind it, right? The whole name of the show came about from Aaron, me, and my wife, Maraid Raid. We're going to do a show together, and Maraid couldn't stand the sound of her own voice. So we just didn't do it, and the website was already built, so we kept the name. already bought the website URL, so the domain name. So can't go back on that. Halloween is coming, folks. Halloween is coming. I have been very busy getting everything ready for my children. We are having a Halloween party this year for kids and their respective families. And I'm getting really excited. I've been getting into it. Like I said at the top of the show, I've been putting up all sorts of lights, all sorts of like scary spiders and stuff like that. And I've been walking around my neighborhood and I've been noticing that a lot of people are using these blow-up decorations. And I can't help feeling that that is a bit like cheating. That's cheating. You can't just buy a big apparatus, blow it up with air, and then put it out in the front yard and it's already got lights in it and everything like that. That's cheating, man. You can't do that. It's not even creepy either. It's not even creepy, right? You walk up to a house with a bunch of lights on and a bunch of these blow-up, like, cartoony kind of things. You're not going to be creeped out by that. You're not going to be a little bit scared. You know what's scary? You know what's scary? The ultimate scare is if only one light is on the house, and it says, come on in, or trick-or-treat, or something like that, and it has a couple of jack-o'-lanterns out front. That's scary. Think back to all of those awesome horror movies. I have been watching a lot of horror movies this week, folks. A lot. Or this past week. It's what I want to do at this time of year. I just watch so many of them. It's great. I love this time of year. But that's creepy, man. Think back to all these horror movies that you've seen in your past. The scariest thing is a house without lights on, right? Yeah. Yeah. That's what I remember as being a kid, man. That was the creepiest thing. Walking up to a door where there was maybe just one light on or something like that, and a jack-o'-lantern, like a candle burning in a jack-o'-lantern, and that was it. And you're all by yourself. You walk up to the door and you knock on it, or you ring the doorbell and you just wait. And then all of a sudden the door opens and you kind of jolt a little bit, and you do your thing. You yell trick or treat. They give you candy. You walk away. But that was the scariest thing. I'm not going to be scared. As a little kid, I would not be scared if I walked up to a doorstep with a bunch of these cartoony looking witches and stuff like that. In a snow globe type situation. That's not scary. Come on. Come on. It's Halloween. Should be scaring these kids a little bit, man. That's what I'm going to try to do. I'm going to do it. Okay, let's get started. Shall we? Shall we get into it? Okay, Aqueduct, man. This conversation with David Terry is very fun, and I think you guys are going to really enjoy it. They had an album out back in 2005. They came out with an album on Barsook Records called I Sold Gold, and it was one of my favorite albums of that year. It was heavy, heavy, heavy rotation in the CD player at home and in the car. I never took it out, much to my wife's chagrin. She liked it too, by the way. She just didn't like it over and over and over again for about a year. So that's what we're going to go with first. I'm going to play this song because this is one of my favorite songs of all time. It's called Hardcore Days and Softcore Nights. It's off of the album I Sold Gold by Aqueduct back in 2005. And we'll be right back with more of the Air Raid podcast for your ears with David Terry, special guest this week on the podcast. Stay with us, folks. in Greenwood for the first time. We bought this condo, right? And we met. I was introducing myself to the neighbors and stuff like that, and met this guy, and you know, we just kind of started chatting because you know they owned one of the spaces in the condo complex, and we just got to talking about like what we do for fun and stuff like that, and I was like, oh yeah, you know, I was trying to be cool, and I was like, oh, I'm in a band, you know, I play in a band, and he was like, oh, what band do you play in? And I was like, you don't know it, you know, and we're too cool, you know. And just really, I was really trying to play this up. Like I was just the top shit, you know? and he asked me, you know, what was my favorite spot to play and stuff like that. And some of my favorite gigs. And so I told him that and I was like, why do you ask? And he was like, oh, I used to play in a band as well. And I said, okay, cool, man. Well, what were some of your favorite gigs? And he goes, oh, you know, Late Night with Conan O'Brien. And I said, oh, what band were you in? And he said, oh, Aqueduct. It was Chris Barnes, your old bass player.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And so that shut me down, just down to the fucking dirt, man. Like that one, wow. Wow.
Yeah. I never lead with that one.
You never lead with that one?
I never lead with that one.
I remember seeing you guys on Late Night with Conan O'Brien. I was a huge fan of yours. Still am. The new album, which is out now, and remind me of the name of it.
Wild Nights.
Wild Nights is great.
Thanks.
It's great. And I Sold Gold is what you guys got up on everybody's radar with.
Yep.
What was that, like 3 years ago or something like that? Was that years. Long ago?
Yeah,
was it longer?
It's 10 years.
Are you serious? Yep. It's been fucking 10 years?
It has been fucking 10 years.
Wow, yep. Dude. Oh, my God. Okay. Yep. Okay.
Which I'm going to put it out on vinyl.
Are you really?
Yep. In a couple months.
Nice. It's,
yeah,
The help of the label?
You know, I'm repressing the vinyl edition just on my own and putting it out.
Whoa, dude.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that like a big undertaking?
It is. It's not. Yeah, it's a big undertaking. Yeah. It takes 4 months.
You can be completely
or so
honest
it feels
here, okay?
Like,
this is a safe space.
It's like
Dave.
So many tiny little steps, but but yes, it is a big undertaking. It is some serious planning ahead to do all that. But I remastered the record this year for vinyl because it had never been considered or put out. So I had to.
That really surprises me too that it was never on vinyl. But I guess like
a lot
the
of
resurgence
it was,
of it wasn't around 10 years ago.
You're right. Yeah, it was a kind of a unique time.
Right.
We were just kind of right in that spot where it was like, what a waste of money, or you know, right. We can sell these CDs. I always longed for it, you know, and I probably should have tried to make it happen, you know, either putting it out myself back then or finding someone to put it out. But now that it's rolled around 10 fucking years, I'm excited to put it out. Wild Nights, I put out on vinyl, you know, when I released it this summer, and that's been a big success.
Yeah. Was it kind of an exciting thing too to like hold your own like master press of a freaking vinyl record?
It was
pretty cool, right?
You know, funny story. You know, I'm pressing vinyl for the first time. you know, I'm unfamiliar with the process, and I get the test pressings in the mail, and you know, I get them in the morning, and I'm at work. I'm looking at them all day, and I'm like kind of like getting them out and checking it out.
Yeah.
My girlfriend was coming into town, and I was like, I'm gonna wait, and play up for her.
Yeah.
You know, this is huge. This is such a big moment, and so I wait. You know, another few hours, and you know, it's evening time. I'm like, I'm just like, I'm just brimming with excitement. And
right.
Yeah. I can't be like, I can't wait. And, she comes over and I get it out and put it on. Oh my God. And, it's like 60s Asian rock, like sung by like a band of female singers. And I'm like, I mean, it's so just like,
so there's a Japanese girl band somewhere on the planet that has an Aqueduct test pressing.
I should have been suspicious whenever it showed up, because it got to me about 2 weeks earlier than it was supposed to.
Oh,
and
really?
I was just like, "Woo!" Like, everybody says this takes so much time, and I'm just gonna, you know, this is gonna be the easiest process for me, and you know,
like,
so much so I'm gonna wait 6 hours to put this on and find out it's wrong.
Was it good?
Yeah.
The Japanese rock band.
You know, I did kind of like that first song.
Yeah?
A little bit.
Oh, right on. Good.
I checked it out.
Yeah.
I was like explaining the whole thing to my bandmate, and I had to like recreate the whole scene for him. I'm like, all right, here you are. You're about to hear your record on vinyl for the first time. Okay, just get ready. Just get ready for it. And then I like put on the wrong test pressing for him and let him, like, this is just like heart sinks. And it's like, yep, that's what it feels like.
That's what it feels like. So you didn't tell him. You didn't tell him that it was the wrong pressing. You just played it out.
No, I just had to recreate the whole scene for him.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. Well, David of Aqueduct, where did music start for you, sir? Take me back. Take me back to little David. Where did
little David? Probably he had a big brother.
Yeah.
So big brother, you know, he listened to cool music.
Like what? What was your big brother introducing you to?
Well, I don't know. My mom had good taste in music too, so she played guitar and, you know, like listened to jazz.
Oh, you one of those
blues and. You know, so my brother got interested in the guitar and, you know, it's probably like late 80s and, you know, mid to late 80s. And he's kind of in that wave of like Led Zeppelin coming back again for the first time, you know, or like, Led Zeppelin being 20 years old. Like, that feels weird.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, or like he had a Muddy Waters tape and, you know, he liked Pink Floyd and just Jimi Hendrix and all this kind of like classic rock, you know, stuff. But yeah.
Everybody goes through that phase, right?
I think so.
Nowadays. Like I went through that. Like I went through a phase where I was listening to nothing, but are you from around here? Like originally?
No, I'm Oklahoma.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So there was this radio station called KPLZ.
Okay.
Right? And then I think that kind of changed. I think KPLZ was the right one. Maybe it was always KZOK. KZOK was like the classic rock station, right?
Yeah.
And so I would constantly listen to that, like even throughout junior high, and, you know, only bought records by Led Zeppelin and fucking Jefferson Airplane, which I don't understand why I ever even really liked. And Jimi Hendrix, of course, and then got into the blues from there and everything like that. You know, it's a total phase. And now I don't listen to any of it.
Nope.
Never going back, man. Never going back. But there's something about that era, right? It's like the 1960s era where you see, like, as a kid, you see all these movies about the 60s and stuff and how, like, fucking amazing it looked in film.
The 60s were very glorified for my age set.
Right, know, like, right. It's like, yeah, everybody's just high all the time and having sex. And as a teenage boy, those are the two things that your mind is set on, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So
that and MTV.
MTV, right.
You know.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, what was I, like four or something when MTV debuted. So it's, you know, it's like, that was the thing that, you know, you were told like, oh, don't watch that. That's bad. Like,
right. Well, right.
Pff, okay. Guess I'm going to be watching that now.
Yeah, exactly.
Ever.
right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So that shaped a lot of my visual pop, like music sense.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
What was it like growing up in Oklahoma, man? Like, it was pretty, were you in like a city or what?
Yeah, I was probably, yeah, it's like, it's a big city for Oklahoma, probably like the second most populous city, Tulsa.
Tulsa? Oh, yeah. Okay. Okay.
So it was pretty normal. I mean, you know, suburban childhood in a kind of.
Just on the outskirts?
You know, I kind of grew up in town, which was cool.
Yeah.
You know, but it was typical kind of Midwest, 80s, you know, the economy had caused a lot of people to just forget about the downtown core. So they're like, well, let's build out, let's sprawl out this way.
And, sure.
You know, it was all that kind of thing. So, it was pretty typical.
Uh huh.
I feel like.
Do you have fond memories of like being a kid growing up there though?
I do. Yeah. I mean, probably like most people feel about their own, you know, hometown or city.
Sure.
It's, you know, it's kind of a magical place that, you know, it's maybe hard to describe to somebody, but yeah, like, I don't know.
Do you ever go back?
Do your parents still live there? The parents still live there. Yeah. I go back. There's some friends. There's some stragglers, you know, there.
How are they doing?
Good. Yeah. Actually, yeah, I don't know. Tulsa, like, it was such a hard place, you know, making original music in the mid-90s. You know, it was pretty challenging. You know, there's kind of only the population just sort of made it where it was like, oh, there's 100 or 200 people that,
are into music, and that's about it.
Into that.
Right, right.
But I don't know. Tulsa's kind of exploded a little bit, especially culturally. Every time I go back, I feel like there's different or more stuff going on that, you know, surprises me.
Yeah.
You know, it's.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah. I love going back to my hometown.
Where did you grow up?
Over here, a small town called Indianola, over on the Kitsap Peninsula.
Sure.
So just kind of a ferry ride away, you know.
Uh-huh.
Far enough away where I can, separate myself from my parents.
You know? Right.
So there's not too many fights, and close enough where I can go over there when I need a babysitter. You know.
Yep.
So it works out.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, I'm always interested about hearing about, like, you know, the Midwest, because the Midwest kind of gets a bad rap.
It
from people
definitely gets a bad rap,
and it seems like it's mostly from people who have never been there.
Yeah, I mean, so much so that I feel like it's only referred to as a flyover state now.
Right,
That seems like such a new.
Does that hurt a little
that's
bit?
That's like such a new diss for the Midwest. You know, it's like, oh, it's a flyover.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Does that hurt a little bit?
That hurts a little bit, but I think about going out on the road and how much fun it is to go back and play those those places for Aqueduct, because you know, that's where we came from, and that's where we made a regional circuit, you know, after kind of like putting the first record out. And you know, I don't know. I can make a lot of, you know, cool shows.
Yeah.
You know, I can put a lot of cool shows together in, you know, connecting all those little areas.
Yeah. Because you know it, right?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. That's great. So your brother's introducing you to, like, all this killer, like, 1960s era rock music and stuff.
Yeah.
When did you... When
getting blasted with the 80s.
Yeah.
You know, all those MTV trends.
Yeah, Flock of Seagulls, man.
Yeah, and I mean, yeah, I think.
More Guns N' Roses, I'm guessing, right?
At that point, yeah. And worse, I mean, you know, like Guns N' Roses was a gimme, but you know, maybe some of the like poison and warrant was a little gratuitous.
There you go.
You know, but
yeah, throwing a little warrant. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe some Nelson on a rainy day.
Nelson? I don't know. You know, after the rain, we can't go that far. my Spanish teacher in high school, though, he came to my school from California, and he claimed to have taught the Nelson twins.
Oh.
So that was always interesting to me.
Wow.
Yeah.
Claim to fame.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Couldn't get behind the music, but... Yeah.
So when did you start like playing music for yourself?
High school.
Huh?
Yeah.
Pick up a guitar or piano? Because normally you're playing. Whenever I've seen you guys play shows, you're playing keys.
Keys. Yeah. I mean, I did. I took piano lessons when I was a kid, and I guess I started playing music for myself then because I, you know, learned how to read music, but my ear was what was really driving me to be interested in playing the piano. And I'd learn a piece of like classical music, and then I'd just start playing it how I heard it in my head.
Mm-hmm.
You know, drove the classical teacher fucking nuts. You know, so my mom,
she can tell you're not.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, she's like
you're not reading what you're supposed to be like, doing here.
That's not proper. And my mom, you know, being the rad lady that she is, she's like, oh, let's get him into jazz piano. So I did that, kind of at an early age.
Really?
You know, middle school.
Were you into it? Were you into playing that style?
I was good at it.
Yeah?
Yeah, it made more sense to me.
Like free form?
Yeah, or like you get like a fake book chart with
with
some chords and a melody, and then it's like, oh, you don't even have to play the chords that way. You can try this voicing, and
you know,
now take a solo. And I'm like, okay, you know,
I don't know.
I was much like my personality. I was pretty modest or like understated about it. I wasn't like a huge music nerd or anything. You know, it was just. I don't know. Yeah, it's like what I did instead of like sports or something, you know.
And, yeah, totally.
Yeah, then high school comes along. My brother's been playing guitar.
Uh-huh.
I'm like looking at his guitar, going like, "How does that thing work?" And I apply just some music theory to it. And I had a friend show me like all the open chords. And
yeah, yeah,
it was over at that point. It was like, oh, now,
and that was the new thing.
Yeah, it was like, oh, now I can like. Put my melodies to these chords and then like actually write words, you know, like that like high school poetry that you write, you know, I can put that to music.
Oh, please tell me there's like early recordings. Do you have recordings of like high school stuff?
I probably sophomore year I started.
Yeah.
I felt like I wanted to sing. So I joined a band where I only sang. And their songs, you know, so it was like, kind of like a fusion-y metal band.
Yeah. And, how'd that work out?
The way it worked out was I started writing songs and bringing them in and being like, hey, can we do these? And they're like, nope, like those suck. And, I just started like getting together with other friends at high school, you know, and being having a lot of fun, you know, writing songs. And actually me and my guitarist now that I still play with, Matthew Nader, we just were able to write songs together and
that's it. In high school, like that you still play with today.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. He's
no kidding.
Guitarist of Aqueduct. Yep.
No shit. Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
So, and he, obviously moved out here with you.
Yep.
Yeah.
I moved out here first. In
what year?
End of 2003.
Okay.
Yep. And I had put a record out and had kind of sent it out, tried to push it to radio and get it in stores. And, you know, it was modestly successful. But it just felt like, oh, I got to take this out of the Midwest out of Oklahoma and, you know, take it to like, I felt like I wanted to go to the West Coast and,
right,
you know, kind of ended up in Seattle on a lark a little bit. Yeah, just kind of started creating a new region and, you know, started touring.
Do you think that's something that most bands should try to do?
In this day and age, I don't know what works. You know, exactly.
Yeah.
But I felt like that was good for me, mm-hmm. you know, because I did feel kind of up against a wall in Oklahoma. A lot of people who I felt like could help the band were saying, oh, I've never heard of you, or, you
right,
know,
right.
Oh, where do you play? And, you know, so moving out here, it was, that was, I kind of met enough of the right people and had a few labels interested. And
well, and it kind of forces you to do that too, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, totally.
Because it's, and this is a subject that comes up often on this show with musicians, is that you get out of your comfort zone, right? It kind of pushes you into a direction.
Yeah. Yeah, which, you know, for me, it can feel pretty overwhelming.
Yeah.
But there are, you know, it's, you can look back, you know, six, 9 months, a year later and be like, oh, wow, I felt pretty lost.
Yeah.
Then, yeah. And
that was the case. Yeah, you just kind of
slog through it. I didn't feel too, I don't know. Things seemed to happen pretty fast.
Uh-huh.
I like came to town and played some great shows, opening up for like Modest Mouse and Not a Surf. And,
well, that's pretty good.
Yeah. No, that's, yeah, that's nothing
that's,
to,
that's,
it's not Conan O'Brien.
Right. But still, I mean, that's a couple of like the first shows that you're playing in town. That's a pretty good start.
Yeah,
I would say
there was a lot. I felt like there was a lot riding on those shows, and
uh-huh.
you know, looking back on them, I kind of like have certain feelings about them. You know, like, wow, I probably wasn't very prepared for that, or you know, like,
were you just doing solo stuff?
No, I had kind of just cobbled together a band. That's mm-hmm. kind of what led to me playing with Chris Barnes.
And Andrew.
Andrew, yeah. I had started playing with Andrew back in the Midwest.
Oh, okay.
And we, I don't know if you know Wes Howerton.
I don't know if I know him.
Yeah. He's, you know, worked at Barsuk and has been around the scene for a while. And,
cool.
Yeah, we all moved in together. And Chris was one of our roommates.
Yeah.
And he had a bass and, you know, seemed like he could play. And
I fucking love stories like that.
Oh, yeah.
Like, this, oh, yeah, we lived with a guy and he owned an instrument. So he was pretty much in.
Yeah. Which way, you know, for him, he's like, yeah, I got to play on Conan O'Brien.
Yeah, man, like, totally.
That's a leader for him.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. See, I have a lot of musical instruments, and when I moved in, Chris was doing his own musical project, right?
Uh huh.
And so I started playing bass with him.
Really?
And he was playing guitar, and it was so, like, I am not a great musician, and it takes a lot for me to learn other people's music because I'm so uh-huh. scatterbrained. And Chris's songs were so complicated. They were so complicated. He's actually moving back here from like wherever he's at, Switzerland or something like
Prussia.
That, Sweden. So hopefully he doesn't hear this, but I had to come up with an excuse. We had a show coming up and I had to come up with an excuse and say like, you know what? I just got too much on my plate. I can't do this because I could not learn the songs. They were way too complicated for
me.
And I've always been kind of embarrassed about that. So, Chris, if you're listening, that's the real reason right there, dude.
Sorry. Which is funny, too, because I feel like he was like, I learned a lot about songwriting from you.
Oh, I'm sure.
At some point, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Maybe I rubbed off on him in the wrong way.
There you go. Yeah, you're making shit too complicated, man. So you move over here. How old are you when you make the jump over to Seattle?
I am 25, 26.
25, 26?
Like, yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
And it seems like, from what I'm getting from you, is like that was kind of an uncomfortable thing to do for your personality type.
A little bit. I do get stuck, you know, or like, you know, I kind of felt like weighed down or pulled to Tulsa.
Uh-huh.
You know.
Yeah.
Leaving like a lot of friends and
sure, everything you knew, right?
And everything, yeah. But mixed with, you know, a realistic, you know, need to get out of there.
Sure, sure.
You know,
yeah,
you know, that inspires songs like the Tulsa Trap,
right?
You know, but yeah, so I get over here and yeah, it's like, you know, get some pretty high profile shows, and you know, and then you play those, and it's like, okay, like, what now? Like,
yeah,
you
what's know. Next?
Yeah, and I was fortunate enough at that Not a Surf Show to play for who would become my booking agent,
uh-huh.
You know, and he sent me on tour with USE. United States of Electronica.
Electronica,
really,
I remember them.
Great friends with those guys, and yeah, that, like, feeling some of that camaraderie and kind of feeling a scene and not just kind of like showing up to the city and,
sure,
you know, like,
did it feel like you were kind of like taken in
a little bit
right when you got here?
I don't know. That maybe felt, that might have been murky for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just like, but yeah, I mean, ironically, it took leaving Seattle and going on tour with a band from Seattle, and you know, and to come back and kind of feel like, oh, this feels like home, and
yeah,
this feels like I have friends, and you know, am part of a music scene here.
Yes, yeah, Well, that's a good feeling.
Yeah. So yeah, and coming home from that tour, playing for Barsuk and kind of convincing them like, yeah, let's take a chance on this uh-huh. band, and had I Sold Gold pretty much ready to go. And
so you had written all that material already?
I might have flown home. I work out of a studio in Texas a lot.
Uh-huh.
And even this new record recorded a lot there. I might have flown home in like 2004 to finish mixing it.
Oh, okay.
Little bit. Yeah.
Just in like a space that you were comfortable in or something like that.
It's a studio, kind of out in the middle of nowhere in the country of, like Denton, Texas, outside of Dallas, Fort Worth area.
Nice.
And, Matt Pence, is part of the band Centromatic. I don't know if you're familiar.
No,
not. Rad band from
I'm going to have to check them out.
Yeah.
But yeah, working with people that you're familiar with and able to kind of bounce ideas off of and stuff.
Yeah, and I appreciate their taste and direction in some of those like moments where you kind of need like a second person to...
Right.
To give you perspective. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So. Well, let's do this. Let's take our second musical break. We're featuring music this week off of the new album Wild Nights by Aqueduct, and we'll be right back with more of the Air Raid podcast for your ears. Just a moment. songs on Isolde Girl, did you kind of know, like, did you have that feeling that this was going to be big for you at
no.
that point?
No. Yeah. It just felt like the excitement of putting out new music.
Yeah.
The people at Barsook, they kind of had more of an opinion, or like kind of used some of their experience to hear, like, I think they heard, hey, this could be a big album, you know, and they had lots of suggestions, like record labels do.
Like what do you mean by that?
Oh, like, hey, we like these two songs from your first album, so you should put them on this. And,
oh,
you
sure,
know,
yeah.
Like all that kind of...
Re-release stuff.
Yeah, well. Yeah, which I was like, yeah, but I've already put those out, so I'll at least want to like punch them up and, you know, had Rudd play drums on them and give them a little bit of a different feel. And
So basically you re-recorded some of the material from your first album
and
put it on
a couple songs.
Nice,
Which just kind of made it weird a little bit, because it's like, okay, you know, I've got this first record, you know, and the new album's getting a lot of attention. Everyone's calling it your debut record, you know, and it's like, no, I'm over here with this record I put out myself, and even has two songs from the first album.
Yeah?
Yeah, so
that... Were you a little annoyed by that?
Not so much annoyed, just...
Yeah. It's like, hey guys, I've been around for a while, like I've been doing this.
I mean, at the time it's like, yeah, you know, you want to put this record out and you want to do this? Okay, sure. Like that makes sense to me.
This is how we're going to do
it. But yeah, maybe it's like the blowback from that where you're like, oh yeah, now people are calling this my first record. And
right.
And then now they're confused. Now they think this one came out on Barsook or like, you know. And so it just made it kind of confusing, you know. And then you're like, oh, and I'm also from Seattle, but I'm actually from Oklahoma. And, you know, it's just like, yeah. And somehow I had the sense to write a song, Don't Ever Ask Me Where I'm From.
Right.
And put it on that album.
That's a great song.
Yeah. So it's like... That's odd how that worked out, where it's like, yeah, actually, I don't want to talk about it because it's confusing, and, you know, it's like, just don't ask. You know?
Right.
Just enjoy.
Yeah, yeah. But it must have been pretty exciting just to be on a label, right? I mean, was that that you'd always kind of, you know, put up there on a pedestal for yourself?
I mean, it was certainly the goal, you know. I'm looking around at other bands, you know, that... I feel like are my contemporaries and you know,
sure.
You know, looking at what labels they're on and, you know, feeling that's the goal. That's the next step.
Yeah, for sure. And so when things started kind of picking up for you guys, what transpired in, the things kind of ramping up after that record came out? And doing stuff like Late Night with Conan.
I mean, those...
And touring the country and, you know, doing that whole thing. I imagine that you guys went on some European tours as well.
Never went to Europe.
Oh, really?
Actually.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
That surprises me.
Yep.
Yeah.
Never gone over there yet.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Is that still a goal?
That is...
Or was it ever?
It's somewhere in the goal
pile. The goal pile.
Yeah.
I love that. if we did...
The goal pile.
If I still did titles for each episode, that would be the title of the fucking episode right there. Goal pile.
Throw another dream on the goal pile.
That's right, man. That's the name of your next record, right? Yeah.
Oh, man. That's good stuff. You heard it here.
That's right. You heard it here first. So, but it's something that you've wanted to do, I would imagine, is play Europe.
Yeah, I mean, in that it's easy to say, yeah, I'd love to go play Europe.
Sure,
you know, a lot of it, like, scares the hell out of me, you know.
Uh-huh.
But bands do it, and bands I know do it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm sure it's one of those, it's like the training wheels like will come off the first day over there, you know,
right.
And it'll be like, oh, this sucks just like touring in the States.
Are you not a big fan of it? Like, do you not like going on tour?
I do like it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I joke. I love driving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Long distances.
Yeah. You know, I could probably stand to have like an extra day in every city, but like that's not fair to everyone else.
Right.
Like, yeah, let's take you away from your families for twice as long. But it's still exciting.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I look forward to doing more of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great, man. So let's rewind just a second. We were on track to kind of talk about how the whole Late Night with Conan O'Brien thing came up.
Oh, man. Yeah. And that of course is a story, you know. I feel like the music business is like 10%. Well, it's like 90% waiting around.
Right. Yeah.
But 10%, you know, something really cool is going to happen, and it's like,
yeah, fucking tell me about it, man.
and maybe it has something to do with what you did, but I don't think, you know, somehow it's like, it's just like a phone ring somewhere.
Right.
And someone picks it up and it's like, yeah,
all right, sure.
Cool shit's about to happen, you know? And that's the way it's always been
for
me in the music business, and everything else is promotion.
Right. Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
Like, you know, scheduling a tour and doing all that, like that's promotion. Like it's fun and it's giving, you know, an audience another side of your music, you know, like the live experience. But you know, it's like when you're like grinding out a 2-month tour after your album comes out, like, yeah, like that's hard work.
And oh yeah.
Yeah. That's,
yeah,
that's
totally. Even it just like, I mean, you know, it's hard work just putting that together.
Oh yeah.
Like I get stressed out putting this show together, you know, like this month has been super stressful already. We're only in what, day 8 of September and already I've done, 4 interviews.
Yeah.
One at Bumbershoot, which is, I hate doing stuff at festivals now. It's just
I can
like,
imagine.
Oh my God.
Nice. You already told me about
that. Yeah. Oh my God. And painting your house on top of that. Right. But, so were you guys on tour when the Conan thing came around?
On tour, you know, Ever was running publicity for us and,
oh, he's been working with you for that long?
Yeah.
Oh no shit. Yep. Oh, that's
that
great,
was, that was like my meeting Ever for the first time, was going to New York and playing.
Oh really?
Conan. Yeah. Cause he lived on the East Coast then.
And came
down there to babysit us. And
gotcha.
Watch us like squirm while we did it. But, yeah, you know, like he sent out a CD like 5 months before the record came out and it got to someone's desk, and you know, I think even Ever was like, yeah, it's probably because it's getting a lot of radio play like on Sirius, and like he was probably eating like his cereal and like your song came on, and
yeah,
they had a like comedian cancel and they needed a last minute booking, and the phone rings and they want Aqueduct.
So it was like that day.
It was a day and a half's notice.
Okay.
Yep.
And you guys were in New York?
We were in San Francisco.
What?
Yes. I mean, yeah.
How did that work?
This story is crazy. We were on tour.
Okay.
Opening up for Mates of State.
Right.
We got the phone call that Wednesday. We played the Noise Pop Festival that night and got to say, hey, turn on your TV on Friday, we'll be on, you know, Conan fucking Brian. So yeah, then it's, you know, it's like Barsuk's on the phone like buying us, you know, like
plane tickets
We are driving like crazy the next morning, missing one plane.
Oh no.
Rescheduling another one, you know, and at some point, you know, I think the show production was like, well, if they don't get here by 10 a.m., then it's like, forget it. You know, and it's like,
oh, God.
We drove from S.
Seriously?
I don't know if you're familiar with San Francisco, but we drove from
yes.
SFO to yeah. Oakland
oh,
in like 15 minutes. Like, that's how determined we were to get
wow.
there. You know.
That's a feat, man.
I know. And my God. Really great friend Jay was running merch for us on the mm-hmm. tour, and we're like, drive the van to Seattle. We'll see you there. Like, yeah. sorry you can't come with us.
That's not Jay Cox. It was
no.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we fly to New York, and
he got there in time.
Yep, got there in time. I mean, it was taping in the morning and.
Uh-huh.
Or like showing up there in the morning to block out the thing. I mean,
yeah.
such a streamlined production, you know, and
oh, yeah,
such a
yeah.
interesting like glimpse into
TV land,
that world, you know. It's like a union camera crew running the set and
right.
and doing the sound, and you know, Ever's like, be nice to them cuz they can fuck yeah. you know, like
oh, that's great.
And they were great guys, and they uh-huh. were like telling us hilarious stories about everyone smoking dope in the band green room, you know.
Uh-huh.
Like, oh, we can do that. you know, we're like these nice kids, you know. Yeah, it was an interesting
Were you
experience.
Were you nervous for that
I was
that
nervous,
show?
But I let it go
uh-huh.
for that 3.5 minutes. You know.
How, man?
I don't know.
How do you let something like that go? I would be a ball of just the worst nerves.
And to make it worse, I did probably what I should not have done. I like, you know, we're playing a song that kind of has this intro, and we're blocking it out that morning, and I'm like, I'm going to say these lines when we go live.
Yeah.
With this, and I'm gonna do this thing, and I'm like just thinking about it in my head, and I told nobody about it.
Yeah.
And then I just get out there, and I'm like yelling at the audience and yelling at the people at home, and then just like deadpan to Conan and say like, and Conan, you know, and
yeah.
and then it's like we're in, and yeah, and I don't know, it just
do you remember what you said?
It just was great. Yeah, it was just like, you know, hello. New York
or something
yeah,
like
hello,
that. Yeah, yeah,
hello world. Yeah. You know,
I remember watching
like Conan. just like, and this guy.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I remember watching this because I think I had seen you guys play once before you were on Conan. And I just remember watching you on the Conan stage and feeling a sense of pride for Seattle because you guys were there. And just like watching you play, and now every time I've seen you play too, you kind of have the same thing, but you always look like you're having such a great fucking time.
Yeah,
up there,
I hear that,
and I've always really like really admired that about you. Like, it doesn't matter what to like, you're on Conan O'Brien or you're at the Crocodile or something like that, and you're just loving it, man.
And I.
Or you look like you are, anyway.
I did kind of learn how to love it.
Uh-huh.
And, yeah, I mean, I think I still kind of follow a few rules about playing live.
Uh-huh.
Which is, like, make it simple.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you can have fun. Because, I mean, I still... you know, have that feeling of like stage Friday, that anxiety, although
yeah.
it feels like fuel as you're coming on stage.
Right.
You know, but, if your shit's complicated, like at least for me, it's
yeah.
just like this fuck up city, you know, just like mistakes everywhere. Like I could never,
right.
I could never like calm that.
Yeah.
Beast to do all this crazy stuff.
I totally get that, man.
Yeah,
same,
so it's just
the same
like,
way. Yeah,
yeah, and I realized that at one point. Like, just don't overcomplicate it. You
uh-huh.
know, my songs are good and catchy and simple, and I personally don't need to like show off. You know, that I can play the piano really well.
Show your solo chops.
Right. Yeah. It's just like, hey, we're here to like amp these songs way up and like, and I don't know. I just, that like helps me feel the rock or the energy. Yeah. And yeah.
So, I mean, it kind of surprises me though that you've never been able to get over that hump. Like the hump of like being like anxious and kind of have that stage anxiety, because you've toured a lot, man.
Yeah. You know, I think it's just human nature, you know.
Yeah,
it's just
yeah.
natural, and probably anyone who says they don't have it is probably lying, you know. And it's like, but how do you just push it down? Or use it.
Drugs.
Or, yeah. Well, there you go.
Drugs
lots and
alcohol, and
lots
man.
Of drugs.
Drugs and alcohol. So are you going to be touring in support of this album anytime soon?
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah, yeah, nothing concrete.
Mm-hmm.
Got some good Seattle shows brewing. But
Awesome.
Yeah, I plan to get out there and make a lap around the country.
Excellent.
You know,
excellent,
for this record.
Yeah.
And I Sold Gold should be on the reissue table in November. So that,
November.
Yeah.
Awesome, man. Yeah. I'm going to get myself a copy of that vinyl. Yeah. That's
it's
awesome.
It's going to be sweet.
Are you doing
it's
anything like, special with it too? Like, is oh, it going to be like, colored? And I
love that. It's going to be like, I mean, you've probably seen the CD. It's like, but it's yeah. like the 12 yeah. inch is like going to be like gold foil.
Yes.
And just like,
that's awesome.
It's going to look extravagant.
That's great, man. That's great. And it's going to cost $1,000.
Right.
It's going to be real gold, man. Real gold. They're not fucking around in Aqueduct, let me tell you. Well, the website is aqueductisgoodmusic.com. And you guys have got like a Facebook page and Twitter and all that good stuff, right?
All the requisite.
Yeah.
Instagrams and
just type Aqueduct into a search engine and you'll find it there.
Yeah. Actually, I tagged everything. I was like a year late getting Aqueduct for some of those for some of those mediums.
Yeah.
So I just made everything Aqueduct Music.
There you go.
And then when I put Wild Nights out this summer, it's like, okay, yeah, released on Aqueduct Music.
Uh-huh.
You know, just
And how are things going with the new album?
It's good.
Yeah?
Yeah. I kind of set up as a bit of an aid to help with the promotion and fund some of this like vinyl dreams. I set up a Kickstarter.
Kind of good.
Like pre-ordering the new record and helping raise funds to do more vinyl reissues. And
you hit your goal with that?
Yeah, it was rad. Everything. I mean,
oh,
yeah.
That's
it was
cool, man.
It was like half funded in one day and
shit, dude, that stuff makes me so nervous, especially when I see like Kickstarters started by bands that I really like
and they don't go
well. I don't know, I can't watch them because
I can't even check in with them,
it makes me so nervous for people who start that. I don't know why.
That was helpful for me.
Yeah
I mean, I it feels a little overwhelming to ask people for. You know, I kind of felt like, you know, I had that artist dilemma of like, oh, I'm asking for charity and, you know, you shouldn't have to pay for my art. Like, you should just buy it.
No,
you
know?
And then it's like,
think,
oh, yeah, you should just buy it. And I could give you all these cool things that I couldn't sell at a store, you know, like old posters and shirts.
Sure.
And
I
like cobbled together a Live and Rare disc for everyone who.
Oh, nice.
Like, you know, got in on the Kickstarter.
Uh-huh,
Like close to 200 people pre-ordered the record, and it was really.
Oh, that's fantastic!
It was rad. Yeah. So, you know, to get through a third of your vinyl order,
and
you know, before the record comes out, like feels great.
Oh man!
Yeah.
Well, so, that's great, dude. Because like, the reason I'm just like it just makes me anxious, you know. To see somebody, because I don't want to see somebody fail at it.
Sure. And I guess, to be fair, you know, I was using it for research, and, you know, I went on there and kind of looked at bands I knew who had done well, and, kind of how they had styled it, or, you know, got some ideas. And some people had the craziest, coolest ideas. And, but I guess everyone I looked at, you know, they're already like past their goal and have 20 days left.
Right. Right.
And then I just kept thinking, well, like, if all these people can do it, there's support for it out there, or there's the ability to connect with your fans.
Totally.
And, I hemmed and hawed about it for longer than I probably should have, you know, and then I did it, and one day goes by and it's 50% funded, and yeah, I was astounded.
Amazing,
I was astounded.
Yeah. That's amazing. Well, I'm really glad that all worked out for you. The new album is great. So, people should go and get it right now. Where's the best spot?
You know, it is, everywhere digitally.
Okay.
You know, I'm selling the physical product through Bandcamp.
Okay. Great.
But, you know, iTunes and all the other...
Get it all there.
All the other places. It's been held back from stores, 'cause there was one kind of mistake on the vinyl order.
Yeah.
So I was able to kind of get it out to everyone who ordered it
through
like a lot of personalizing
yeah.
and like adding back in the mistake on, you know, 200 plus copies of the vinyl. It'll be in stores, you know, Sonic Boom and
awesome,
Easy
awesome.
Street and
all local the, places.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All the
yeah.
places.
That's great,
yeah,
man. So. Well, David, thank you so much for coming by, dude. This was a lot of fun talking
yeah,
to you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hope
yeah.
you enjoyed
Thanks
yourself.
For having me. Yeah.
You're welcome. Well, there you have it, folks. David Terry of the band Aqueduct. Once again, you can find them playing Halloween Night, Halloween Costume Party at the Neptune Theater with Of Montreal, Diane Coffee. And Diane Coffee. I said that wrong. At the Neptune Theater here in Seattle. So if you're in the area, or if you're Matt in Kent, go get your tickets now and check out the show, because it's going to be a lot of fun. Also, if you're a regular listener to this here podcast, you can go to the archives tab at www.air-raid.net, click on that and find all 273 episodes archived for your listening pleasure right there on the website. People like, Duff McKagan of Guns N' Roses, original founding member. How about Scott Aukerman or Aisha Tyler or Jim Brewer? Or Mike Birbiglia, or Eddie Pepitone, or Hari Kondabolu, or many, many others, right? Yeah, there you go. Mike McCready of Pearl Jam. Yeah! Sebado, Lou Barlow, man. That was a fun one. Cody Chesnut. How about Raz Simone, Macklemore, or Saul. All there for your listening pleasure, folks. And a ton more indie musicians, man. I never give the indie musicians cred, but that's like our bread and butter on this show. So go and check it out at air-raid.net. You can subscribe to Air Raid on iTunes, and if you do, please take a moment to rate the show. Only takes a couple seconds to leave us a star rating and really helps us out in the long run. We're also available on the Stitcher, TuneIn, and Cairo Radio apps, and now on the Spreaker service through the Adore Network, adore.fm. By the way, news on that, we're going to be changing the RSS feed here soon, and we'll keep you posted on that. So follow us on our social media pages, like Facebook at facebook.com/TheAirRaid Podcast to find out when we're doing that. Or you can find us on Twitter at AirRaidNet, or email me directly at aaron@air-raid.net. Holy God! Should I just record this again? No, I'm not going to, because it's late and I need to get this show out so I can go to sleep. And remember to take the pledge, folks. Take the pledge to tell somebody about this here show. We would really appreciate it. Bring it up in conversation. Sign somebody up. Subscribe them for us, will you? Without them knowing. That works. That works. We'll take that. All right. Folks, thank you so much for listening this week. It has been a pleasure joining you in your earphones. we're going to go out this week with the song Falling Down by Aqueduct off of their latest release, Wild Nights, which is available now. Go to aqueductisgoodmusic.com and get yourself a copy, folks. And don't forget, go and see them playing with Of Montreal at the Neptune Theater on Halloween night. Have a safe and sane Halloween, everybody. We'll be back next week with an all-new episode of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears. Thanks again for listening. Have a good one, everyone.
Hey man, what?